Here's to your health with Dr. Burns.
Hello, everyone, and this is Dr. Burns. Thank you for tuning back in to Here's to Your Health. Today, I don't have a guest. It's just me. And, yep, I love hearing from all the new guests that we have, too. And it's been great hearing from all of them. I learn something new every time that I have a new guest on things that that I incorporate into my life and that I start doing. But today it's just me, and so hopefully everyone here will have a good time in listening in. First off, I'd like to extend a hand out to those that are in Syria and with the troubles that are going on there, and we hope that everything resolves quickly for you guys. And sorry about the things that are going on over there. And also, so what we're going to be talking about today is about medical marijuana and some of the beneficiary aspects of it. And then I'm also going to probably get into some other herbs as well that also have some of the healing aspects to it or pain relieving aspects to it, like medical marijuana does. So first off, I would like to start out with that there are now going to be about like 20 states, that's almost half the United States, that's going to be having legalized medical marijuana in their state. And it's just such a huge topic. I know it's like Washington State and also Colorado have made it recreational for use for anybody, where other ones like Illinois has a pilot program, and others like Arizona and Nevada are actually using it just as like any other prescription medication, where you need to see a physician first to get the certification before you can go to a dispensary to get the medications that you need for like whatever the ailment may be. There are a lot of great health aspects that end up coming out with medical marijuana. Matter of fact, even the CNN physician, Dr. I think it's Gupta, was going around televising saying how much he's changed his mind about medical marijuana. The thing that got me started in the practice of certifying people for medical marijuana was I'm seeing like cancer patients with they're in a lot of pain, they're on morphine and whatever else that they need with to help out with appetite and nausea and the pain that comes along with radiation and chemotherapy. And a lot of these people were feeling very tired. A lot of them couldn't get up. A lot of them were feeling just very sick and very nauseous. And the appetites were very low just because of all the chemicals, that were pumped in them or the radiation and stuff. With my father, I was able to get him through 3 rounds of radiation with no side effects, just doing a whole bunch of herbal stuff. But he had a incurable cancer. And so after that, once they started the chemotherapy on him, and, it's like, of course, you're basically racing against time when it comes to cancer. So that's why I ended up getting into certifying people for medical marijuana. There's a page that I saw in a research article talking about some of the benefits of medical marijuana, and I'll be putting some of those research aspects up on my website for those that talked about some of the actions that go on with them. But there are what I'm going to talk about is a little bit about like some of the components that are in medical marijuana that can also be found in other plants as well. So it's not just medical marijuana that can also be used for this. So first off, there are, they found that there are 3 cannabinoid receptors in medical marijuana. Cannabinoid 1 actually goes to the brain, and cannabinoid 2 actually goes to the immune system. Cannabinoid 3, I think they're still trying to figure out at this point, like where the main area is and where its focus is. So from those cannabinoids that are there, most of the cannabinoids that are in there are good for pain management. And the cannabinoid 2 properties that are there, they say that don't have the psychotropic action to it as the THC and cannabinoid 1 would, which basically goes to the brain. So what happens with this is for those that have a plant or use a plant that's like low in THC and high in cannabinoid too, you know, they get more of the pain relief aspect from it. And, you know, they can still get the increased appetite and everything else that they need without it, without someone feeling, you know, like lethargic or having insomnia or any of those side effects that could happen from people. Some of the things, and then you're also looking at like other ones, like echinacea has highly been studied for cannabinoids, and that they do have cannabinoid receptors to them. So echinacea not only is good for antiviral, antibacterial, but it also hit as good for, you know, like mild pain, because it definitely has some of those cannabinoid aspects in there for pain relief, which a lot of people need whenever they're suffering from like a cold or something like that, that they need something for pain. They're also like Jamaican dogwood is another one, which is basically for herbalists to prescribe, that really helps out with pain as well. And some of the you know, medical marijuana and a lot of these other herbs have been around, have been used medicinally for over 5,000 years for many different aspects of it. And there was an article that came out probably like 3 or 4 years ago talking about medical marijuana and reversing diabetic retinopathy. Basically, it's where like the retina is starting to detach, and they said they can actually help, you know, like reverse the beginning signs of it, of the retinopathy. And so with this, there are certain in each state, there are the ones that have it for medical purposes. There are certain conditions in which this is actually good for. One of them, they said, is for Alzheimer's. This is a study that was done in 2006 for in California. And they discovered in here that the THC, which is an active ingredient in marijuana, can prevent an enzyme called acetylcholinesterase from accelerating the formation of these Alzheimer's plaques that usually end up in the brain, as well as the protein that ends up coming from it. And so from this, they said that it helps to be able to reverse to where it's, you know, slows down the development of these plaques. So it helps slow down the process of the disease. It doesn't necessarily reverse the disease, but it helps to be able to slow it down. Another one here is for it was from the Virginia Commonwealth University, discovered that the ingredients play a critical role in controlling spontaneous seizures in epilepsy. Dr. Robert De Lorenzo, professor of neurology, said that it has been shown that in individuals and a broad report that it has therapeutic use and for epilepsy. And but he doesn't go into specifics on how. For multiple sclerosis, there's another study here that's been published saying that it's in clinical trials is evidence of marijuana impact on multiple sclerosis patients with a muscle spasticity, that it actually helps decrease pain in the arms and in the legs, and it also decreases the spasticity that's in there. In the 1970s, there were studies that came out stating that for glaucoma, that it actually helps reduce and relieve the pressure that ends up going into the optic nerve. And so that's how it helps to be able to relieve glaucoma. Although most everyone I see, it doesn't reverse the glaucoma, it just, you know, basically halts it where it's at. So, I mean, there are still some people who are still on their glaucoma medications just to kind of help keep things where they're at. Another one, of course, is arthritis. This one, I mean, there's been a lot of studies that have been done seeing that it helps reduce inflammation. It helps people be able to get more sleep. It doesn't reverse the arthritis, but it just basically helps to be able to, for people to be able to deal with the pain better than before. And then with Hep C, there was a study done at the University of California at San Francisco in 2006 saying that it helps to improve the effectiveness of drug therapy for Hep C. An infection that with Hep C, about 3 million Americans contract it each year, that the Hep C medications often have severe side effects, and that the marijuana actually helps with those side effects.
Hello and welcome to Here's to Your Health with Dr. Burns. I am Dr. Burns and I have with me from Kitty Corner, I have Elsa. And Elsa wants to talk a little bit about exercise. So Elsa, is exercise supposed to be fun?
Yeah.
Okay, what type of exercise do you do?
I just do ballet, but somehow I don't. But somehow I'm alone like 2 days because Kelly isn't at me.
Okay, so do you like to dance?
Yeah.
Is dance a good exercise?
Yeah, but I usually dance with the 12 dancing princesses.
Okay, so yes, you can dance to music or to videos. They got videos out so that you can dance to. What other types of exercise are there for kids that are fun? How about like, is bike riding fun? No, come here. Recording right now. Is bike riding fun?
Yeah.
So running. What about, yeah, running's fun too. What about swimming?
Yeah.
Okay, and what about jumping? Is that fun too? Yes? So are those all the things that we can do to stay healthy and to exercise?
Yes.
Okay, are we supposed to exercise every day?
Yes.
Yes, all right. Well, thank you very much, Elsa, for joining us on our show.
All right, and welcome back, everyone. So when it comes to, you know, like pain relief and for herbs like medical marijuana, of course, there are side effects that everyone needs to look after, and a lot of them is like heart palpitations, nausea, fatigue. Sometimes people get insomnia, irritability, you know, the psychoactive parts that end up going with that. And if something like that happens, you know, we ask people to go to the emergency room, or, you know, it's just basically, you know, waiting that out. So that's why, you know, like at least here in Arizona, we have the dispensaries to help people know exactly like what it is that they need with the dosages and stuff like that. So then that way they, hopefully they won't run into a lot of the side effects that can happen if, you know, that from medical marijuana, because some people are very sensitive to it and some people aren't, just depending on, you know, body makeup, pain receptors, you know, how sensitive people are to herbs and stuff like that. One of the things I thought that was interesting as I was going through this is that there's one person who had an article out stating that if people didn't have a good diet, that their medical marijuana wouldn't work. And there was controversy about that, whether, you know, like diet actually plays into how well, you know, things work. And they're saying mainly, you know, like with fish oils, with the omega-3s, that it's like the more omega-3s you have, that the better the medical marijuana is going to work. Well, medical marijuana is fat soluble, so of course it's going to work with more of the fat-soluble like vitamins and nutrients than it is with the water-based ones for something like that. The other thing that a lot of people, I guess, aren't aware of is that marijuana actually does have estrogen effects that can occur. So I haven't seen studies of it yet, so I need to look it up. But I do know that it can cause what's called gynecomastaly in men, which is basically male breasts. And so normally that's due to the estrogens rising. Estrogens absolutely love to stay in fat cells. And so because of that, that's one of the side effects that can occur. And so that's why, it might be better for men to get a baseline of where their hormone levels are at even before getting on medical marijuana, just in case if something like that does occur, then we might have to substitute with other hormones or just basically stop the marijuana altogether. For people, even though it helps a lot of people out with pain and stuff like that, there, sometimes it can wreak havoc with, a hormones, can cause hormone imbalance with raising the estrogens in both men and women. So it's not just men that it'll do that to, but with the estrogens as well and women. So, which I thought that having that, and besides like appetite and all that actually really are beneficial for people who have AIDS or cancer patients who are having the low appetite from the chemo and radiation and from those type of side effects or even from their medications. So the one thing that I like though is that you can find a lot of these. There is an article that was out stating that you can actually find cannabinoids, going back to cannabinoid plants that actually have cannabinoids in them. They're also saying that like carrots actually have some cannabinoids in it and helping out with pain relief that way. There's a lot of talk out there too with the most studied besides medical marijuana with cannabinoids is echinacea. And as from Kevin Spellman, when we first had him on, that there are a lot of cannabinoid activity and compounds in echinacea. And so combining that with some other pain relieving herbs, like, like the other one that's really being researched right now is like omega-3s and omega-9s. And being able to balance those out. You notice that people are getting more omega-3s than they are omega-9s. And so a lot of times what happens is that there actually needs to be a balance between that in order to bring the inflammatory process down. And so I know we keep pushing in the medical field omega-3s, but you also need to also add in the omega-6s and omega-9s as well in order for that inflammation to go down. Now, when it comes to the omegas, people need to have at least 2,500 to 3,000 milligrams a day in order for people to start having that pain relief aspect to it, decreasing the inflammation. So there's a lot of people who can't, tolerate too much, like ibuprofen, Aleve, like naproxen, some of those over-the-counter NSAIDs. And I've never seen anyone get stomach upset from omega-3s. So sometimes I have people on as much as like 4,000 to 10,000 milligrams of omega-3s a day for them just to bring the inflammatory aspect down. The omega-3s are very good. They're nourishing not only for the skin, but also they have a lot of other properties helping out with hair and with brain function as well. It actually helps to improve memory because you're bringing the inflammation down and you're getting all those good nutrients and antioxidants stuff from the omega-3s, which is why the omega-3s are very popular. With the up and coming research on that one. The other thing that I like about some of this is when it comes to gut inflammation, they found that these cannabinoids are actually very good with any gut inflammation like IBS, IBD. So that's why taking the omega-3s actually help people who have inflammatory bowel disease being able to bring that inflammation down. Even like with celiacs or Crohn's, a lot of times a lot of these people are very nutrient deficient in these components. And so adding in those omega-3s along with probiotics really help to be able to decrease the inflammation in that area. And people notice too that they're not getting like as much as the reoccurrence of the pain once they're on those high omega-3s. When it comes to pregnancy, for a lot of women that are pregnant, sometimes their IBS or IBD can go into remission or it can make it worse. And so a lot of times having people on and it really helps the baby with cognitive function stuff having those omega-3s in there. So I usually say probably about like 2 to 3,000 milligrams a day is actually good in utero for the baby for like brain development and cognition. So when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was probably on like 4 to 8,000 milligrams a day, just because when I was pregnant, my IBS, you know, was one of those where my IBS got worse instead of getting better. And that was the only thing I could take was fish oils and omega-3s in order for all of my digestive tract to actually become bearable for me to, you know, go through the pregnancy. And so because of that, I definitely have a very smart daughter. But it also, what it does is that if the omega-3s are given in utero, that just means that, you know, my daughter is going to be more, I guess her body is going to recognize the omega-3s a lot better than say mine was, because, you know, when my mom was pregnant, she didn't take any omega-3s, and that was many, many years ago. Other thing that the scientists that are coming up in studies is that I absolutely am excited about is bentonite clay. I absolutely love this stuff. Bentonite clay is very natural. This stuff is awesome for like diarrhea or abdominal upset. It will, you know, if you are going, you know, like out of the country somewhere and you end up getting that traveler's diarrhea, bentonite clay is probably like one of the best anti-diarrheal things that I have found for traveler's diarrhea. This stuff will suck up E. coli. It sucks up C. difficile. They're starting to use bentonite clay in hospitals specifically for C. difficile. They found that about, you know, 60% of the patients that's in there who have to have like an overabundance of antibiotics actually are able to be on the bentonite clay. And I mean, it just gets rid of it within like a couple of days. And bentonite clay is actually safe enough for like dogs, cats, horses. So there are a few of the places out there like herbal stores or other vendors that sell specifically for, you know, like natural animal supply stores that could probably have that, as long as some herbal stores that'll carry this bentonite clay in, you know, like powder form or in capsule form for, you know, like other things. You can make a mask, you know, like basically like a clay mask with the bentonite clay. And what it does is that it helps to be able to take bacteria out for acne. So anyone who has like bad acne, who's tried like the proactive Neutrogena supplements, you know, Retin-A, whatever it may be, and it hasn't gone down, they've totally changed their diet, they're on the zinc and vitamin A, vitamin E, whatever else it is that they're on, this would really help with that. You just basically put it on, make a paste out of it, put it on for a few minutes, you know, like you would with anything else, probably about like 10, 15 minutes. And then after that, you just, you know, take it off, and it works really well for the acne. But the key to bentonite clay is do not put it on anything metallic. If you do, you're going to deionize the active ingredients that are in the bentonite clay, and then it won't work anymore. So who knew that putting something like bentonite clay on something like metal would deactivate it, even though it's something that's so universal and absolutely needed for, you know, like any gut issues. Matter of fact, I was joking with one of the manufacturers that I have where I carry bentonite clay, and I told him, I said, your product works so well that I'm losing patients because it works so well. And they start laughing and they're saying, well, that's good and bad. I said, yes, that's true. But The nice thing about bentonite clay is that you really can't, I mean, there really is no like overdosing on it. You basically, I mean, it's like might have constipation for a day or two, but then after that, the bowels are regulated again. So, I mean, it's something very natural, very safe. And I remember hearing about it in school and using it. And then it's like one of those things where you like forget about it and then rediscover it. And then you find out is then it becomes like one of your favorite things in the world that you want to do. So there's a lot that can be done for this and for like acne, which I know can be really painful for people, you know, with the cystic acne and stuff. And I found that the bentonite clay really helps to be able to pull all that bacteria out from the skin and actually help to reduce that inflammation there. And echinacea also does that as well. Echinacea, if you put it on your face, can actually, you know, because it has that anti-inflammatory property in there, will also reduce the inflammation of the acne to where people aren't having the pain. The acne doesn't come up as much because here again, you're getting the antibacterial effects from it, which I think is absolutely fabulous. So, and the, one of the things that I also love too is catnip. A lot of people don't know that catnip is actually good for broken hearts. So it is having that with a little bit of like rosemary and lavender, putting it in like a little bag when you're sleeping is a good thing. It helps people to be able to relax and be able to get some sleep from it. So, and we'll be back in, we're going to take another break right now. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is Dr. Burns, and welcome to Here's to Your Health. We have a special guest today. Her name's Elsa, and from Kitty Corner. So, Elsa, what are some things that you've learned about between eating good food and bad food? What should you be eating?
Bananas. Oranges.
Okay, what else?
Peaches.
Okay. So, now, are we supposed to be eating good food or bad food?
Good food.
What happens if you eat bad food?
Then we get sick and want to eat.
Okay, so then if we want to have energy, if kids want to have energy and be able to play, then what are we supposed to do?
Good food.
Okay, all right, thank you. So, and that is from Kitty Corner with Elsa.
Hello and welcome back everyone from break. So I'm just going through and talking about some herbs and some common things that can be done for over the counter. With cold and flu season coming up, everyone kind of wants to know, okay, what do we do? Do we take the flu vaccine or do we not? Well, for someone like me, every time I seem to take the flu vaccine, I seem to end up getting the flu. Which I know a lot of the researchers, pharmaceutical companies are saying, no, you cannot get the flu from the flu vaccine. I'm just like, yeah, you can, because I'm proof of it. So what I do is I actually take oxalococcinum, which is an over-the-counter product, and I take a vial a week during the cold, during the flu season. And so far, I have not gotten the flu, and I've been doing this for 6 years now. So, and they kind of, and I really like their formula that they have. I mean, my daughter, and I also give them to my daughter as well. She also gets a full vial every week too. I think she got one flu vaccine when she was one. The rest of the time, it's just been the oxalococcinum, just like one time a week, one vial during the cold and flu season. And she hasn't, she hasn't gotten the flu, but, you know, of course she has gotten a cold because oxalococcinum is not for cold. It's basically, to homeopathics to help out with the flu. And of course, you know, like, I mean, keeping, you know, like surfaces clean away from like from those viruses and bacteria also help out as well for that And then boosting the immune system. Vitamin D is really good, taking 2,000 to 3,000 international units every day to kind of help boost that up. Also, you know, to boost your immune system up, which is what vitamin D does, is also very beneficial to do as well. And I would also up the vitamin C as well, from probably like the daily allotment is 500 milligrams a day to probably somewhere between 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day, just, you know, so you can boost the immune system, probably have a shorter period of time when it comes to the flu, and being able to hopefully stay healthy while everyone else around you is, you know, going home and sleeping. And so not being able to have the energy that they would like to have during the holiday season. So if you start now with it, with the, you know, change in weather in Phoenix, we haven't had a change in weather yet. It's still 106 degrees outside. But for those of you, if you start noticing that it's cooler in the morning, warm in the afternoon, and cool at night, it's probably time to start thinking about boosting your immune system. So getting that vitamin C in, adding in a little bit of zinc with it, and also some vitamin D, will go a long way to help boost the immune system and, you know, hopefully keep you from getting too sick during the flu and cold season. So another thing that I like is doing for a lot of people is there's a plant called chaparral. Chaparral is one of those types of plants that is also antiviral, antibacterial. It's found naturally here in Arizona, and also in California and a little bit in Nevada. And the chaparral, it's also known as creosote or laria. You can make a tea out of it. And that's also, you know, drinking about like 2 or 3 times a day. And it really helps with, you know, like if you got a cold or the flu. Other ones that you might not think of but are in your seasoning cabinet are ones like oregano and thyme. Yes, these are very good on your spaghetti with your lasagna, but they are also antiviral and antibacterial as well. And so you just put a teaspoon of it in a little bag. You steep it in about 8 ounces of warm water for about 10, 15 minutes. Then you can add like some stevia or honey to it to get the antibacterial, antiviral aspects from those. So, and then of course there's oregano essential oil as well, which is sold basically over the counter at a lot of vitamin stores. That with that one, I would probably only put like 1 to 2 drops in some water and take it that way to, you know, help relieve a cold symptoms, you know, here again, cold or flu, with the antibacterial, antiviral aspects to it. So those are some little goodies to have as, you know, like the weather starts getting cooler for some people. And before, you know, everything starts up again, I could tell that it's almost time for that type of season, because where my daughter goes to school, a note came home 2 weeks ago saying that, I guess one of the kids had strep over at school, and I'm like, that's impossible. It's 110 degrees outside. How can we have strep? Well, when you get like a whole bunch of people together, and you know how little bacteria and viruses love to travel, someone's going to be susceptible to it, and it's going to happen. So once it's active, it just loves to travel. So that's why it's like, if you ever are sick with a cold or flu, please stay home. Don't say, oh, but I have to work. I'm sure your boss will understand, and that you're trying to save everybody from getting sick as well. So those are some neat little things that we have as far as a cold and flu season. The other thing is a lot of people, you know, because it gets, well, not here in Phoenix, but in other places, you know, when winter sets in, you got cloud cover, you got the snow. So basically everyone stays in. In Phoenix, everyone's outdoors because the weather is so nice. Here during the summer, a lot of people stay indoors because it does, you know, because of the triple digit weather that we have, with it being 106 to somewhere between like 120 outside. It definitely makes for interesting life here in Phoenix. So we do the reverse. I see seasonal depression during the summer, where most doctors would be seeing seasonal depression during the winter because of people staying inside and not having a lot of light outside. One of the things that can definitely help with that is opening up the curtains. Here again, taking your vitamin D. Vitamin D actually helps to boost mood as well. And also the omega-3s also will help do that as well because it definitely works on brain cognition. So, and to save off on that, there's also, besides St. John's wort, there's also other products out there like ginkgo biloba, which actually helps bring more circulation to the brain. And then, of course, there's also like SAM E is also one as well that helps be able to help people out, be able to handle stress a lot better than what they would normally. And also too with omega-3s, people seem to notice that they handle stress better too, because here again we're looking at, you know, like anti-inflammatory aspects. We're also looking at antioxidants, which helps to reduce that, and the brain absolutely loves it. And so it really helps to be able to bring, you know, that type of light anxiety or depression down during that time. People are the stress better is because they're not having the free radical damage that they were getting, you know, like when they were taking like low dose, yeah, omega-3s as well. And vitamin C can also be used to help, you know, lighten mood, because here again, the adrenal glands actually use vitamin C to, for energy. And it also helps out with, the B vitamins also help out as well, because you're taking your food, it's converting it into energy. People feel, you know, when people are feeling good and more energetic, the adrenal glands here again also love the B vitamins as well. So being on like high, you know, like about like 3,000 milligrams of vitamin C along with like a B complex are going to be very beneficial as far as like keeping that immune system up, you know, being able to handle stress a lot better. And it also helps people be able to get better sleep that they need for that. So, it's like, I absolutely love, you know, like all the vitamins, because you definitely need them. The body needs it for, you know, like almost like every aspect that it does, as far as like giving energy, being able to, you know, balance things out. I noticed that a decrease in vitamin C also too, you know, some people can actually, you know, high levels of vitamin C can actually help regulate menstrual cycles and stuff, because the body needs it for that. And for a lot of people who have like peeling skin or skin rashes or something like that, a lot of times that's due to insufficiency of vitamin C, which is actually really good for collagen rebuild. You know, for people who have like chronic dry skin, it could be here again that they're not getting like enough fish oils, or magnesium isn't staying in the body. So you might want to have your magnesium levels checked. Besides, you know, like if you're drinking adequate water, that's one of the things that you have to be concerned about, besides thyroid function. For people who have like dry hair and dry skin, it could be thyroid function. It could be not enough fish oil, not enough vitamin C. Looking at also hormone levels as well with what's going on there. And a lot of times too, hormones can also play an aspect on being able to handle stressors for men. If their testosterone levels are low, it can actually create depression in men. So a lot of them can have that, what they call a midlife crisis, could be due to depression, which could be due to low testosterone. But a lot of men don't want to get to their doctor to find out if that's what the case is. So that's why it's good for men, say like around 25, to get a baseline of where everything is, because it's starting at age 30. For both men and women, the hormone levels start going down. So even for women, getting in at like about age 25, getting a baseline of where your hormones are, so then that way when things are going on later on, you can tell like what's going on, what needs to be substituted, whether it's like low testosterone for men. Sometimes the testosterone is converted into estrogen for men, so then we'd have to substitute with some other like herbs or bioidentical hormones for that. So, and then of course, like, we keep testing them like every 6 months or so, until they balance out, and then we end up doing the testing once a year. For a lot of guys, once they're able to bring those testosterone levels back up, they notice that they handle stress definitely a lot better. They're not as depressed, and they feel like themselves again. For women, a lot of times too, that can happen as well, where depression and anxiety can come in because there is an imbalance of those hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. Yes, women do produce testosterone. It's just in a lower dose, lower form of it. And so even like putting in like a little bit of it can actually go a long way as far as helping with skin and hair and helping them get those nutrients in for that. And then, of course, like the thyroid function as well. I mean, if it's like 100 degrees outside and you're cold and you got to be wrapped up in a sweater, there could be a thyroid issue going on. And so a lot of times people who have chronic stress can also decrease their thyroid function as well. So even getting that tested along with the hormones is definitely a good thing to do. So then that way you can, you know, like basically get your baseline done, see what all is going on for people to get back to optimal health. So these are just some little tricks and that we have of the trade and helping people out. I know people try and do things themselves, like getting DHEA over the counter. Well, the DHEA might not exactly be converting into the testosterone that men need. It might actually be going to the adrenal glands, because one of the precursors for the adrenal gland function and also for hormones is DHEA. So a lot of times the reason why they're tired is because their body isn't moving in the direction that it needs to. And so it'll take from the testosterone, from your estrogen, from your progesterone in order to keep the adrenal glands going, because it's not producing enough DHEA in order to keep things going. So sometimes, you know, just substituting with the over-the-counter stuff like DHEA might not necessarily work in boosting it in where it needs to be at, because the body will pull and use whatever you bring in. The body will pull and use wherever it thinks it's sufficient or deficient in, and where it feels that it needs to be. So that's why getting the baseline, talking to your doctor, finding out what the best course of action would be for every individual. So that's why, you know, like looking at someone, or like even like 10 different people, I would have 10 different solutions, because everyone's different as far as how they deal with things. You know, even like with medications, you can take amoxicillin. For some people it works. For some people it may work. Some people are highly allergic to it. So you just never know what's going to happen. So just the one, you know, one model for everybody doesn't fit everything in there. So I would like to thank everyone for joining us today on our show, and we'll be back next week in a couple of weeks with some very interesting guests. Have a great day.